But tonight's topic is bow hunting black bears with Joel Riotto. Joel is a published author of archery and bow hunting, such as Bowhunter Magazine, Traditional Bow Hunting Magazine, Archery World Magazine, Professional Bow Hunting Society Magazine, Bear Hunting Magazine. How do you have time for all this, Joel?
Well, when you're retired, it comes easy.
All right. Well, I'm not done. The list goes on. Sporting affiliations are many. He's a senior member of the Pope and Young Club, life member, Professional Bowhunter Society, life member of the New York Bowhunters, also a life member of the New Jersey Foundation of Sportsmen's Clubs, founder, past president, and member of the Traditional Archers of New Jersey, past president of the United Bowhunters of New Jersey, past president and life member of the Bergen Bowman Archery Club. I'm going to say that you like bow hunting, maybe.
Yes, I've been very fortunate. A lot of my favorite experiences are related to archery, and I like to give back to the sport. That has brought me so much joy.
Joel, is it, you know, I'm not sure. When I did the title of this show, I wasn't sure whether to call it bow hunting or archery, to be honest. What do you prefer? I don't want to offend you here.
You're not offending. And bow hunting is one of the components of archery. Archery, as you probably know, is an Olympic sport. Archery has been around for thousands and thousands of years. And bow hunting is just an old faction and function of archery.
Okay. So what attracted you towards archery and then bow hunting?
When I was 6 years old, I was a Cub Scout on my first overnight camping trip, and in the next field were a group of Boy Scouts practicing for their archery merit badge. And I went over there and made such a pest out of myself that they taught me how to shoot a bow and arrow that day. And that was 69 years ago. And with the exception of a year overseas in a summer resort area in Southeast Asia, I've had a bow and arrow in my hand ever since. I love archery, and I love the discipline you learn from it and giving back to the children. I've taught hundreds and hundreds of people how to shoot a bow and arrow, and they've never had somebody say, I don't like this.
Yeah. How old were you when you started then?
I was 8 years old when I started.
And you said before
he's
the
doing
show.
The math now.
No, I'm not trying to do
yes,
that.
Yes, I'm 77 years old.
And you teach adults as well, I think
yes.
You said before?
Yeah. Yes. As a matter of fact, sometimes the adults are much more receptive and much more enthusiastic than kids. Kids don't have the attention span. But most adults, in half an hour, we can have them hitting a target.
Okay. Has it changed? You've been teaching probably for a while. What have you noticed, any changes amongst people?
Well, yes. The hunting population in general is declining. People are too busy. Archery is an Olympic sport, and with all the recent movies such as The Hunger Games, there's a resurgence in archery, especially traditional archery, and a lot of people are really getting back into it, and I think that's good. There's also something called the National Archery in the School Program, NASPA. Each individual school that participates has a competition in their county and then in their state. And then, of course, you have each state sending the students, the winners, to a national shoot-off. The national shoot-off was held in Nashville, Tennessee last year, and it was 7,000 kids from all over the United States. And what's wonderful about the NASPA program is the bow is standardized, so there's no advantage there. And whether you're 8 years old or 14 years old, you're using the same equipment. It's wonderful.
Yeah. Did you ever shoot a bow in school, John?
I did, yeah.
You did?
They had it in middle school, and then again, they brought it back in my senior year in gym class.
In Delhi.
It was a weird break.
You know, no kidding.
I don't know why they got rid of it for a while. But
no, didn't have it in New Paltz. Didn't have it.
And we used to go down. We had to go all the way down, a long walk, all the way down to the other end of the football field, the field hockey field.
Yeah.
There's a big bank back there, so it was safe to shoot up.
That's cool. Yeah, all right. Well, so around here, you know, you talk to bow hunters, and bow hunting's changed a lot. I mean, there used to be recurve only, and now there was compound, which we can explain. And now there's the crossbow, right?
Yes, that's true. But actually, the longbow, the recurve, and the compound are bows. Now, we're going to deal with my personal opinion here, because, as you know, they're handheld and hand-drawn. A crossbow is not a bow. It's an effective weapon. It's fired from the shoulder like a rifle. It's fired. It has a stock like a rifle. The trigger has a safety mechanism like a rifle. It's generally equipped with a scope, a telescopic sight with crosshairs like a rifle. I have nothing against somebody hunting with a crossbow, but don't say it's a primitive weapon and put it in the archery season. It's not a bow. As a matter of fact, advertisers right now and manufacturers right now are advertising, meet your next rifle. I mean, that's their advertisement, and they advertise obtain rifle-like accuracy with your bow. And, of course, that clearly it's not archery equipment. A longbow has been around for thousands and thousands of years and variations of it. Our Native Americans used a much shorter plains bow and harvested, as you know, all the game to feed their tribe, their families. A recurve bow is a offshoot of a longbow insofar as the limbs are somewhat redesigned to add extra arrow speed. A compound is a wonderful bow. It's handheld. It's drawn by hand. It uses a lot of technology to assist the archer. It gives him greater distance, greater accuracy, and it makes for people coming into archery. It makes it easier to come into archery, whether it's archery or bow hunting.
Right. What do you think about compound bows?
I think compound bows are wonderful for the people who want to shoot them and take advantage of the technology. Mm. My dearest hunting friend hunts with a compound bow. He shoots a bow with long axle length, because he shoots with his fingers instead of a release 8. But there's nothing wrong with a compound bow. There's an awful lot of them to pick from, though.
Yeah, there are.
Yeah. Just the bow shop in Margaville, I think, has four or five different brands.
The bow shop in Margaville, they're wonderful people. They help. You see all the time they have children there. I think it's North Hills Outdoors. They all the time have children there. They give classes. It's just a wonderful place to go. And they have an indoor shooting range that makes it easy for beginners to practice in a safe environment.
So what do you use?
I shoot a recurve bow. I don't have a collection of recurve bows. I'm blessed to have met a bowyer in Montana. He makes bows one at a time. You choose the woods, and he laminates them for you. They're works of art. We like to say he manufactures a Stradivarius of recurve bows. They're backed with clear glass, and they're very efficient hunting tools. But unlike some of the other equipment we're talking about, the only moving part is the limbs, and the only thing that can break is a string. And for someone like myself, the simplicity of it and the romance of it is very important to me. And I don't mind the range limitations. I like getting very close to the game animals I pursue.
What are the limitations?
Well, my limitations are self-imposed. Everyone should have their own self-imposed ethical limitations. I have never knowingly shot at a game animal much over 20 yards, which is 60 feet. If we're tracking an animal that was previously hit, whether myself or a friend, and it pops up 25 yards away, yes, we're going to shoot at it to try and hasten the recovery. You owe it to the animal. Technically, they are told that your range limitation is 1 yard for every pound of bow weight. So in theory, if you shoot a 50-pound recurve, in theory, you should be able to effectively and efficiently and ethically harvest an animal at 50 yards. 50 yards is too far for me to shoot in the woods, because there could be an unknown twig in the way. So my self-imposed limitation is 20 yards.
What species is that bow that you have of wood?
The bow I shoot is manufactured by a bowyer in Montana. It's called Dale Dye Trails End Recurve. And I have chosen the woods. Each of my bows has different laminations in it, from Babinga to Coco Bola to African Vermilion. The laminations are beautiful. Red elm in the limbs or medicine wood in the limbs onto clear fiberglass makes a stunning, stunning and beautiful bow and very efficient.
Okay. What Catskill woods, or are there any Catskill woods that are acceptable for making bows?
I would like to be able to make a connection to the Catskill Forest, so let me think about this for a moment. Other than a hickory, I can't think of any wood indigenous, if I may, or to the Catskills that is commonly used for bow. Bow wood has to have certain characteristics, the ability to recover quickly and bend and not break. Osage orange is not found in the Catskills, but that's a wonderful wood for bows, for people who make self bows.
Yeah.
A lot of people make a self bow. A self bow is a derivative of a long bow, which is just literally one stav whittled down.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic. Tonight's topic is bow hunting black bears with Joel Riotto. Joel, what about the arrows? What are you using for broadhead here?
With respect to arrows and broadheads, up until very recently, most of us used Port Orford cedar as a wood for arrows. Unfortunately, the cedar harvest, especially in the West Coast now, you can't get good, clear, strong cedar. So we're using carbon shafts, like in current fishing rods. I personally assemble my own arrows. I buy the shafts, I buy the broadheads, I buy the feathers, and I still am involved in the manufacture of my own equipment. I sharpen my own broadheads. Some broadheads today are expandable type of broadheads where a razor insert will pop out upon impact. That's fine for some people. I like the old-fashioned cut-on-impact broadhead, which I sharpen myself. I use a three-bladed broadhead manufactured in Iowa. It's called the Wenzel Woodsman, a very famous broadhead. And you know with me, if it's not broken, don't fix it. I've been shooting Wenzel Woodman broadheads for decades. It gets the job done.
Right. No kidding. All right. So let's talk about black bears since we promised people we would talk about them. What is your attraction to the almighty black bear?
Black bear is an extraordinary game animal, probably one of the most underrated game animals on the North American continent. They are vastly more intelligent than people will believe. They're also delicious in a pot, and I want to emphasize, I eat everything I shoot, and if the black bear wasn't edible and created with wonderful recipes by my lovely wife Noreen, I wouldn't pursue them as much. Black bear is extraordinarily intelligent, and they're cunning. To get close to a black bear is one of the greatest features of woodsmanship, and they're not as heavily populated in the Catskills as deer, for example. So the opportunity are less, and if you understand food and shelter, then you can focus in on a black bear. They can't be patterned as much as white-tailed deer can because their range is tremendous. New York's biologists have done wonderful studies, and some male black bear will cover 20 to 30 mile range in a period of a month. So they're not always going to be bedding on the hill and feeding in your fields.
Right.
But when they do come around, if they find a food source, it will hold them for quite some time.
And can you then predict movement? Are they going to, if they, I guess, in an apple orchard, are they going to come to that every day and bed up on the hillside every day, kind of like a deer might?
Thanks to the effort of you, John, and Ryan, and people in the Catskill Forest Association, we have restored apple trees on our property, and we have learned to release oak trees, and this, of course, puts food on the ground or makes food available for black bear. And yes, right now the ground is covered with acorns, and the bear find a tree that they like, a sweet tree. they have a preference for white oaks, although there's no white oaks where in my property or in the area around me, but they'll eat black and red oaks. And once they find a tree that's bearing good fruit, they'll stay with it. And if you just look at the trunks of the trees, you'll see the claw marks, and you back up and look up in there, and you see the damage they do, breaking a limb inward so that it can get at the clusters of acorns on the end of the limbs, and same thing with apple trees. And yes, John, they will hold in an area until the food supply runs out, then they'll move on to your neighbor's property or 50 miles away.
And bedding, where do you find that they go?
Well, unlike a deer that needs a sanctuary for bedding, in my own experience and my limited experience, if a black bear is done for the day, he's going to lay down right where he is. He's not going to take the time to seek out a cave or a blowdown or something. If it's nasty weather, yeah, they'll curl up under a blowdown or something like that. But a black bear carries its bedding area with him. Their hide is thick. Their hair is wonderful for insulation. And unless they're hanging in a particular area, as we've discussed, they could bed 5 miles apart every night this week.
Again. All right. So when you're about to go hunt bear, what are your steps leading up to that? What are you looking for? How are you preparing yourself, your bow and everything?
Well, my bow is always prepared. My arrows are always sharp. What I do is the same thing that any good deer hunter here in the Catskills will do. I go out and I look for sign. Black bear sign is pretty distinct. Doesn't look at all like black bear scat. Doesn't look at all like deer scat or droppings. And if you find where they're feeding, as I said earlier, if you see claw marks in a tree, you'll know they're feeding in that particular area. You look for food and you'll find the game. Food and shelter for deer, food primarily for bear. Where we are, we have some small plots of ground that we've worked diligently with, and we have clover growing. Black bear love clover. They take over a clover field. Trail cameras show that a bear lays in the middle of the clover field 2-3 o'clock in the afternoon, and when the deer start filtering in, the bear chases them out of the clover field. I mean, it's just something that's that easy to prove. And, of course, clover very soon, with the cold weather we're beginning to experience, is going to lose its palatability, so they'll move on to something else.
What do you think, John?
I had no idea that bear eat clover. One time I did see a bear, this was March, last week of March. I figured the bear must have just come down off the hillside out of his you know, winter slumber there. He was sitting in the middle of a hayfield, and two paws shoveling, and I mean shoveling grass into his mouth. That's the first and only time I've ever seen a bear do something like that.
Well, a black bear is omnivorous, and in this area, I would venture to say that the majority of their food is greens, meaning mast, soft mast, hard mast, buds, grass, clover. They're opportunists, and if they have an opportunity to, and they become very proficient at this locally, run down a fawn in the spring, they'll easily take a whitetail fawn. If they find something that's injured, they'll stay on that carcass until they finish it. And they could. That's another way that if you find a carcass that a bear is feeding on and it's not done, the bear will keep coming back.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest. Tonight's topic is bow hunting black bears with Joel Riotto. Joel, how do you go about picking a setup site? You're like, okay, this is a good. What tells you that it's a good site to hunt bears?
Well, when you find a good site to hunt bear, as a bow hunter and a close-range bow hunter, I will either construct a ground blind or I'll hang a tree stand. If I'm going to hang a tree stand, I will usually hang two. Because God bless the winds here in the Catskill Mountains, they're always changing. And if I'm watching an area where a bear has come out of a thicket into a clover field or come out of a woodlot into climb into an oak tree or feast on some apple trees, generally speaking, there might be some sign, a path. Bear are notorious for as they walk from one place to another. If they do it more than a couple of times, they step in their footprints from before. So you find sign like that, and you set up a stand, and you try and get downwind. You try and have the sun at your back, and wait.
Wait.
And wait.
And what do you wait. Mean? What do you mean? What do you mean?
Well, in a tree stand, you know, you can't snap your fingers and say, okay, now's the time for a bear to appear. It's not uncommon to spend 4 or 5 hours in a tree stand and just watch the squirrels running around.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of that. How high are you up in the tree with a recurve bow?
I prefer to hang my stands lower than most because if you think of an angle, the angle from the tree stand to the animal, I don't want to be 30 feet high. I would rather be between 15 and 18 feet high. That lowers the angle and gives me a greater probability of the arrow passing through both lungs of the game animal, whether it's a deer or a bear, but since we're talking about bear. Properly hit, a bear expires very, very quickly. If you go take out two lungs on a bear, that bear is dead in 100 yards or less. Unlike deer, if a bear is going to, more than half of the bear will give a death moan as the lung air comes out of their lungs just before they expire, and that'll give you an idea where they are. Improperly hit, a bear will go forever. There is a new philosophy on shot placement with bear. It's called the middle of the middle. One of the guides that I spent a lot of time with in Saskatchewan, Rob Nye, he noticed that as his clients were shooting a bear in the middle of the middle or a little bit forward of that, they were recovering those bears very quickly. As bow hunters, we're always focused on shooting tight behind the shoulder because in a white-tailed deer, that's where the heart lung area is. Well, black bear is built a lot different from a white-tailed deer, and their lung area is further back on the body. So if you shoot more or less the middle of the middle or a little in front of that, you're going to get the tail end of the lungs or both of the lungs. And, again, that usually means for a very short tracking job and quick recovery.
So you want to go a little bit further back and then vertically in the middle is too. So in the middle of – what do you mean by the middle of the middle?
If you take the front leg of the bear going up and down behind the front leg, you can't shoot through a bear's shoulder blade with archery equipment. You take the body section, and if you just come up from the body, the top down or the bottom of the belly up halfway and then halfway between the front and back shoulders, that's more or less the middle of the middle. A little bit in front of that is ideal.
Yeah.
Keep in mind that a black bear's hair can be 4 or 5 inches long hanging below his belly.
Right.
So if you try and shoot too low, you're going to miss the animal completely.
Yeah, I know a lot of whitetail guys are aiming tight behind that front shoulder and sometimes even the lower third because that's where those heart and lungs are, and especially the heart's hanging down in there low in the chest cavity. So
what about the belly? Where's the belly? Well, don't want to hit the belly.
No, you generally don't want to hit the belly. However, again, woodsmanship comes to play. If a bear is improperly hit in the belly, as you put it, or in the guts, as some people would refer to it,
right.
If you just leave them alone, if you don't pursue the bear, just leave it alone. In that particular case, and again, this is in my experience, a gut shot bear will run off, hear nothing following it, hear nothing pursuing it, and it will lay down and will expire there, usually one or two beds, and is dead. If you pursue it, it's going to go forever, and you'll lose the animal or have a high probability of losing the animal.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest, and tonight's topic is bow hunting black bears with Joel Riotto. All right, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. And tonight, we're talking to Mr. Joel Riotto, about bow hunting black bears. So, Joel, what do you want to talk about?
Well, we can talk about the size of black bear because that's always a topic that gets exaggerated one way or another. Black bear is a very hard animal to judge in the woods. But right now, according to the information available to me, the heaviest black bear on certified scales in the United States was harvested in North Carolina, and it weighed 880 pounds. I have seen in New Jersey, and we have pictures in New Jersey, of a black bear on certified scales being weighed by Fish and Game of 829 pounds.
Even locally here in Roxbury, where this station is at, I follow the Bear Harvest Report every year, and there's been bear taken over 600 here.
The heaviest black bear ever handled in the state of New York, handled, weighed, tagged, and then released, weighed at that time 684 pounds. You see, it's difficult to get the weight of New York bears because there's no requirement to bring the bear out of the woods whole, as there is, for example, in New Jersey. I'm sure in the Adirondacks, black bear are taken over 700 pounds every year, but these bear are then field dressed, quartered, and brought out in pieces because of the remoteness of the location. But the heaviest black bear handled and recorded in New York was 684 pounds.
Wow.
However, the largest black bear that I know about was taken in Iron River, Alberta, in Canada. And once again, this is information available to me that I verified. That particular bear was not weighed on certified scales. The bear was harvested by a farmer, put in the back of a pickup truck, and they drove the truck to the granary where they weigh trucks of grain. And then they weighed the pickup truck without the bear. The difference was 960 pounds. Those are not certified, highly accurate scales. But when you look at the picture of that black bear in the back of the pickup truck, clearly the animal is well over 800 pounds.
The head on that thing is huge.
The head on it is huge. And you see, bear in the United States, in black bear, period, all bear, period, let me correct myself, I'm sorry, are not scored on how much it weighs because of the difficulty in getting accurate weights. They're scored on the length and width measurements of the skull, and that is done uniformly. The skull has to dry 60 days after being harvested before it can be measured. So the largest black bear ever harvested by a firearm hunter in the United States and recorded measured 23 9/16 of an inch. That's the length and width of the skull combined. The largest black bear harvested by a bow hunter that was recorded measures 23 3/16 of an inch. However, the largest black bear skull ever was picked up in Utah. The bear died of other causes, and that particular bear skull measured 23 10/16 of an inch. So that's a standard application, and those are the world records that I'm just quoting. Of course, different sizes for polar bear, brown bear, and grizzly bear on a different scale, but that's a different animal.
That's a different animal.
That's a much different animal. However, the black bear that we just spoke of are heavier than most mountain grizzlies.
Amazing.
Vastly. Most mountain grizzlies are in the 350-400 pound range.
Is that right?
Mountain grizzlies, that's correct.
You wanted to talk about some history of the legalities surrounding bow hunting?
Well, yes. We had discussed the history of bow hunting, and I'm sure everyone, when they think about it, bow hunting dates back to the Stone Age. People, men, humans, have been harvesting animals using a bow and arrow to feed their tribe, their clan, their family since the Stone Age. However, let's talk about the legalization of bow hunting as we know it now in the United States. In 1934, Wisconsin decided that there was enough interest to have its first bow hunting season, and it was a season set aside just for archers. And of course, while the like anything else new, it had to grow. But that's when bow hunting was first legalized in the United States. That was the first legal season. The surrounding states picked up on it quite quickly. And after that, bow hunting became legal a state at a time until now it's legal in all 50 states.
Really? And did it cause an uproar in Wisconsin at first with gun hunters, or was it just whatever?
That's a very good point. There was resistance because no one believed that a bow and arrow could be an efficient weapon or an effective weapon or a humane weapon. So because of that, a group of people associated with the National Archery Association, actually in the late 20s, said we have to find some way of keeping records to prove the lethality of a bow and arrow and to prove the effectiveness of it. So the group struggled for some time, and they took the measuring system and record-keeping system of the Boone and Crockett Club, which is the firearm record-keeping organization in the world, and the Pope and Young Club was formed, and using the same measurements, they started taking statistics of harvest rates and ratios. And eventually, the gun hunters embraced the bow hunters, and the phrase "become a two-season hunter" came to the surface. It was good PR at the time, and it works today. Many people that we know, especially here in the Catskills, are two-season hunters. They hunt both with a firearm and an archery equipment.
John, are you a two-season hunter?
I am.
All right.
It's technically three if you count muzzleloader.
No kidding.
I am.
After the kill, Joe, what are you doing?
As with any other game animal, you want to take care of the meat quickly. I've said it before, and I'll keep repeating it. Black bear is delicious when properly prepared, just like venison is delicious when properly prepared. If you don't care for a deer, the meat's going to be terrible. You field dress a bear the same way you field dress a white-tailed deer, and I'll keep making that relationship because in the Catskills, they're the two main game animals. But you have to get the bear cool a little bit quicker than you have to get a deer cooled. A bear hide holds the heat a great deal. So I like to get the skin off it pretty quickly. And then the butchering process is the same, wrapping and freezing. You have your roasts, your rumps, your steaks, your backstraps, bear stew, bear meat cooked in something, in a liquid, like in a sauerbraten sauce or in a stew, is wonderful because it puts some moisture back in the meat.
Yeah.
And then the hides can be tanned and saved for rugs or other mounts. So it's a wonderful experience start to finish.
Do you use the fat?
There's a whole new interest in bear fat. Yes, you can render the bear fat down. You can use it for things like the preparation of crust for pie baking. You can use bear grease for waterproofing boots. It's an underutilized animal, and the interest of late, I would say in the last 10 or 15 years, in black bears, because now they're repopulating all over North America. Yeah. The interest will follow, and as will the recipes and the use of. You should use every part of the animal.
What's your opinion on getting the fat away from the meat? Is that as important as it is with deer?
Absolutely.
It is?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And there's not as much fat in a bear as there is in a deer, not in the meat. The fat will be under the hide, especially on the back, under the hide and along the back. You can render that down. Yeah. Don't forget, the bear are building up fat now for hibernation.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest. Tonight's topic is bow hunting black bears with Joel Riotto. Joel, time's flying here, so let's talk about some memorable hunts that you can think of with a black bear. Can you decide on one?
It's very difficult. Each experience is wonderful, especially in Alberta. When I saw black bear doing things that I never knew they did before, like making rubs and scrapes, which everybody says, well, wait a minute, deer do that. Yeah, well, so do bear. And when I mentioned this to some biologists, I was told, oh, they don't do that. I said, well, I've got it on film. And I shared that film with a biologist for the University of Alberta, Canada, and that began a 15-year a relationship, a long-term relationship, as I saw a bear doing things that were different and strange. I communicated with that biologist. Her first name was Sophie. And actually, she put together a beautiful thesis on black bear. They do make rubs. They do make scrapes. They mark. Here you'll see them, especially marking softwood trees. They'll stand up and bite the tree. And then they'll rip the sides of it. Then they'll turn around and rub their back into the sap. If you find such a tree marked up, you look carefully. You find a lot of hair stuck in the sap. And then they'll reach up behind them and pull the tree limbs down over their eyes. And they'll rub their preorbital glands in the limbs, just like a buck would make a rubbing branch. So they're quite interesting that way.
Joe, maybe you know the answer to this. I don't know what this bear was doing. I tracked him in the woods, and he went up to a small hemlock tree and broke out the top section and was dragging it, seemed like, somewhere to do something.
The only thing that comes close to that I've seen is a bear walk up to all saplings and bend them over and walk over them. So the sapling is being dragged along their belly, and the thought is, and the theory right now, is that they're leaving scent on the tree limb, and then when the tree snaps back up, the scent is high up off the ground, and the other bear think that, gee, that's a really big bear around here, I ought to be careful. Same with the marking of the trees. They're higher up.
Interesting. Do bears eat the buds of trees at all?
Do bears eat?
Like a deer would browse on the buds of a tree?
Yes. As a matter of fact, in the West Coast, especially Oregon and Washington, you were talking about lumber companies in Maine. One of the biggest sources of damage to the forests that the tree companies are trying to grow is bear eating the cadmium layer underneath the bark. They chew through the bark and they destroy the tree to get at the under layers of it. And it's quite a destructive practice, and it's creating a situation where perhaps the lumber companies need to thin out the bear in those areas.
What are there any examples or things that come to mind about a peculiar bear that you've hunted?
Yes, one thing comes to mind. It'll be a memory that I take with me forever. I was hunting in the White Mountain Apache Reservation in Nevada, and we were pursuing a particular bear who had brown hair, and we found the brown hair on a bait barrel every evening, but he never showed up when we were there. And finally, we took a pack of dogs and started tracking the bear at 8:30 in the morning. And knowing we were going to be moving, I traveled light, had a backpack and some water and some lightweight clothing. And we were on that track following dogs for hours and hours. And then we'd go back up to the truck and take the truck along the top of the ridges and take fresh dogs and go back down into these canyons. And eventually the dogs treed that bear, and I was able to harvest the bear. One arrow went right through the bear. I never did find that arrow, but the bear died in the tree. Uh-oh. So the outfitter and I now are facing this dilemma, and we couldn't climb the tree. It was a ponderosa pine. We tried throwing a rope over it. He tried pulling me up. Make a long story short, he went back to camp, got some screw-in tree steps, screwed the tree steps into the ponderosa pine, climbed about 40, 50 feet up in a tree, pushed the bear out of the tree, and then we were able to field dress it and bring the meat out. That was the White Mountain Apache Reservation.
Did anybody consider getting a chainsaw and cutting the tree down?
You can't do that.
Not an option, John. So
somebody thought of it.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Tonight's topic is bow hunting black bears with Joel Riotto. Up next, I'm going to ask Joel why people should support bow hunters and bow hunting. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest. Tonight's topic is bow hunting black bears with Joel Riotto. Joel, why should society support bow hunting and bow hunters?
Society has begun to really embrace bow hunting because it allows for the harvesting or culling of game in close proximity with residential dwellings. As we mentioned earlier, there's a resurgence in black bear all over the United States. They're coming back and reproducing at rates faster than the harvest. We have photos of a black bear in New Jersey. She had 6 cubs this year. The bow hunting has become an important factor in wildlife management. Every state is taking it into consideration, and especially for black bear, for example, here in the Catskills, in 2014, the Fish and Game decided that they needed to start harvesting additional black bear. Now, your archery season is roughly 5 weeks. Your rifle season or big game season, and it may not be rifle season in every zone, is basically another 4 or 5 weeks. And they said, you're not killing enough bear. So in 2014, in certain wildlife management zones in New York, They started a black bear only any weapon season for 16 days, which is run every year now. Archers are proving to be extremely successful in New York State. Archers are responsible for between 25% and one-third of all the black bear harvested in the Catskill region. I don't have the statistics for the Adirondacks. I'm sure it's lower because of the habitat there. So, and also with the movies of the Hunger Games and everything like that, people are seeing archery in a different light. With the programs in schools, the kids are coming home learning discipline that they didn't learn before. I mean, every superhero now has got a bow and arrow in their hand.
Yeah, true. How about the future of bow hunting, Joel?
Well, the future of bow hunting, I believe, as we know it now, is going to change very dramatically and very soon. Now, this is my personal opinion based on 60 some odd years of having a bow and arrow in my hands. There's been more technologically inspired implements developed in the last 20 years than in the previous 200 years. Everything is being designed to make it easier to harvest an animal, pushing aside the skill and woodsmanship that previously were needed to harvest an animal. Now everything is being replaced by gadgets. What's going to happen is this is going to lead to higher animal harvests within those particular seasons, and subsequently the seasons are going to be made shorter. So the bow hunting seasons that we spoke of earlier that were first legalized in the 1930s were legalized because it was a primitive weapon with very little impact on the game animals. And now when you have statistically, the archers are harvesting between one-third and 50% of the deer in some states, and obviously I just said one-third of the bear harvested in the Catskill region taken with a bow and arrow. While they're achieving the harvest goals to avoid conflicts, eventually they're going to shorten the season. In Michigan, the crossbow was legalized for use in the archery season in 2009. Since then, the crossbow licenses have increased to a point where in 2013, crossbow hunters accounted for 50% of the licenses sold. They harvested 92,000 animals, whereas the archers using handheld equipment only harvested 44,000 animals. So now the seasons are getting shortened and everybody's going to have less recreational time. The technology has brought about something called the airbow. The airbow is essentially a rifle-like weapon powered by compressed gas and air. It fires a bolt similar to a crossbow bolt at speeds up to 450 feet per second. These implements offer a very unfair advantage over rear bows, and definitely, while they are legal in some places, they should not be incorporated in the archery season. Bow hunting as we know it now is going to be drastically affected by technology, and I believe in the long run, bow hunters are going to get much shorter seasons and have much less recreational opportunities. And if I could just divert for a second, you asked me earlier about memorable times in the woods. I'd like to tell you about a very memorable time bow hunting. I was not bow hunting for black bear. I was bow hunting for mountain goats in British Columbia, one-on-one with a guide. We were at about 12,000 feet, and I heard an eagle screaming. And that's something, of course, I've learned here in the Catskills, because we're fortunate to have bald eagles back and golden eagles back right around all the reservoirs here in the Catskills. And here I am standing on the ground at 12,000 feet looking up overhead. Where's this eagle? I hear an eagle screaming. Where's the eagle? The guy tapped me on the shoulder and pointed downhill. In the valley below us was an eagle soaring the way they do, screaming to a flush game. And that was the only time in my life I ever had my feet on the ground and I was looking down on an eagle in flight. And these are things that don't happen when you're sitting on a couch with a remote in your hand.
Yeah, I agree. That does not happen when you're inside, for sure. We got about 30 seconds left, Joel. I don't know. What do you want to leave off at?
I want to leave off that. I want to thank you and John for the opportunity to share some of these experiences with your listeners. I want to tell your listeners that the work you have done on our property has created additional habitat. And I was surprised to find out a couple of weeks ago that some of the habitat improvements you did on our property actually created denning sites for black bear. So I want to thank you.
That's awesome. Well, that's a good place to leave off at. And Joel, thanks for coming on and talking about bow hunting black bears. Up next is Mostly British with Rick Neblong. Have a good night.